Well, it's May. We're into May. The weather's warming up. We're almost at the NBA Finals Series. Thwaites is laughing at my intro. He's cracking up with his mic on mute. Welcome to Third and Five. If that intro doesn't get you going, Thwaites, I mean, really, what will?
Exactly.
I mean a rousing intro when you've got no idea what to say.
Yeah, just starting to talk about the weather. It's almost like we're in July where we just have no sport on again.
Classic Kiwi tactic, eh? If in doubt, go to the weather. Welcome, everyone. Simon Hampton here, James Thwaites, heard from him, Dave Rice as well. Gents, it's good to be back with you again.
Yeah, what a week. You know, like the weather's better, like you said, diverting to the weather again.
Yeah. It is good, though. I mean, seriously. I mean, obviously, new people listening in New Zealand get the other, you know, flip side, but
aren't they like currently underwater? Is it Auckland currently underwater?
Yeah, true. it's remarkable what it does for the mood, though. Seriously, when the weather warms up, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I had a text message from a friend yesterday asking what my plans were for the weekend. Played some spike ball in the park.
Was that a friend?
Yeah, that friend was you.
That sounded like a text I would have sent.
So, you know, like it got me thinking, like, how good New York parks are, which I think is surprising for a lot of people. But then, like, how good the park games are in America. Spikeball is fucking next level.
It's great. Spikeball's fun. Klopp's great. Have you guys gotten to pickleball?
I want to. Dave.
Well, as
a tennis purist, you're just sitting there.
I mean,
shaking his head.
Absolutely not.
Here comes the boomer.
No, what I'm actually interested in is to whether pickleball's made its way to the likes of London or Melbourne, like, or is it just sort of insulated to America? To me, it's a sport played by people that live in Florida and Texas. It's made its way here, but I feel like it's basically tennis for old people that are not that just don't want to move as much.
Well, it's fucking loud and annoying. Yeah, it's fucking loud though, because like, it's like the plastic and plastic, like it's
it's everywhere though. They have this. They've changed the little theme park in Central Park to about 30 pickleball rinks. I walked past a Dwayne Reed in Financial District the other day, and someone had just put up a pickup pickleball net, and we're playing pickleball outside of Dwayne Reed. Yeah, outside of Dwayne Reed and Fano. So it is all the rage. I think it's one of those sports. I don't think the professional pickleball's really going to take off that much. I think that's not going to be where the money is. I think it's a social sport that people aren't really going to watch on TV.
Here's my thing on that. I'm with you on that. I would rather watch table tennis than pickleball. I feel like there is far more skill involved in table tennis, you know, on like a similar scale than like pickleball, right? So I don't know, maybe we're gonna get an abusive message from like a pickleball pro or something.
Fuck him, come at me. I mean, like, you'd rather watch tennis pros play than pickleball pros. I mean, I don't see, you know, having said that, I did see on Instagram a pretty cool video of a pickleball rally where one guy was just making the other guy run. I think
they're even trying to get these like kind of former, you know, like your McEnroe, Agassi, Michael Chang, like guys from the sort of 80s and 90s.
Old guys that can't play tennis anymore.
Exactly. I've seen like posts probably from like tennis pages, you know, with that, because it's seen these guys all together again. But that's to me the demographic and age that you're sort of targeting and playing.
I mean, it's just weird because it's like, I wouldn't mind playing pickleball myself. I don't want to watch it on TV, though. And I feel like this is fucking spicy. This is like a...
I could
take down a black bear in like a one-on-one fight, but I couldn't take down a grizzly bear. You know when you're like assessing animals that you could beat in a fist fight and you're like always ranking yourself high? I feel like the difference between an average pickleball player and a pickleball pro wouldn't be that as dramatically different, as dramatically big as a casual table tennis player and a pro table tennis player, and a casual tennis player and a pro tennis player. Is that a hot take?
Are you telling me you're going to make a run at being a pro pickleball player?
Fuck, honestly, how good would that be? Like, we just spin off the pod, we do another one where it's just like on James trying to be a pickleball pro.
Live on the circuit every week.
Maybe you could take that to Netflix or Apple TV and that could be like a little doco.
Yeah. Are you allowed to say the C word on Netflix yet? Or is because that's probably the deal breaker.
Yeah.
I don't know if my vocabulary
would make it. It's a non-negotiable as well. It's not, you know, not backing there. Let's rip into it, huh? Only one place really to start, and that's the NBA, where there's old guys playing, but their knees are still holding up. LeBron James playing very nicely. The Lakers doing tremendous stuff out west, getting it done against the Warriors, up 3-1 at the moment. 3 months ago, who would have ever thought this Lakers team would be here? But here we are. Did you see that there was a report that if they win the chip, Russell Westbrook will get a ring?
I did see that. I
don't hate that. They played a lot of games.
I don't hate that either. Like, is that bad? Is that a bad thing?
No, you can't. No, you played a lot of games for them. But I think that's where we're going to start, right? Like, are you surprised that the Lakers are in the position they're in right now?
Fuck yes. I mean, the only reason why, like, so I don't hate LeBron. I don't hate Anthony Davis. But that Lakers team started off 2 wins, 10 losses to start the season. We were having conversations on this pod about how ridiculous it was that the Pelicans were going to have a Lakers pick that looked like it was going to be easily kind of like a top 4, top 5, like lottery pick, which is absolutely insane. Anthony Davis has been great, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy a lot. So the Lakers, where they are, especially like even before the trade deadline, there were rumors that they wanted to try to get Kyrie. They had to go down a different path. They obviously made a lot of moves. They got D'Angelo Russell and a bunch of others. They obviously got rid of Westbrook, who stayed in LA, just started playing for the Clippers. So it's a dramatic turnaround for a team that is going to knock out the Warriors. Like, I would be crazy to think that that Warriors team can come back from 3-1 down, especially with the way Poole is playing and others. I mean, it would kind of be a cool storyline, though, if Curry did that, considering LeBron and the Cavs did that to the Golden State Warriors years ago, but I just don't see it happening. But the Lakers, good on them.
Yeah, I'm on the LeBron train now. I'm okay with them winning it all at this point, because I think that'd be a fantastic story.
Over Denver, get fucked, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the NBA organization definitely won't mind having a LeBron making a deep run and getting to that.
No.
Because just like Tom Brady with the Super Bowl, like the interest is going to be there at its premium when you've got LeBron, who is without a doubt by a country mile the biggest star in NBA playing at the moment. I think the biggest thing was always with them is staying healthy, right? I'm pretty sure Davis and LeBron have played the last 10 straight games, which has obviously been through the playoffs. That's a huge part of it. And it's, yeah, the things they did at the trade deadline and the moves they made, and they're getting a lot out of their role players, which, you know, before that trade deadline, they weren't and you didn't have much trust in them. But, you know, who was the guy that got 15 points in the fourth quarter the other night? He was already on the team, but, like, you know, getting something like that, that's going to make them so hard to beat because you're obviously focusing on the two superstars. So,
yeah.
And then you look at the Warriors, I kind of agree. I'd be very surprised if they can, I could see them winning, you know, maybe taking it to 6, but I'd be surprised that they could win 3 in a row, given how they're playing, given how Clay's playing. Jordan Poole is Jordan Poole possibly the worst contract in the NBA right now? You'd have to be up there.
Oh my God. I was about to pivot into this. There's two things that have been really great. Austin Reeves is earning himself a big fucking paycheck in the offseason, which is great to see. A bunch of these other Lakers players are really flourishing as well. But Jordan Poole, he was exceptional in the later half of last year and leading into that playoff run. And everyone was like, we got a third splash, brother. Holy shit, you're right. That's looking like an awful contract now.
We're sort of talking about the Warriors like they're already gone. I mean, if they come back from here, it's going to be one of the great stories. But, like, it's going to be interesting. Draymond Green's probably gone at the end of the season. And Clay's on the – feels like, you know, the best years of him have gone. Jordan Poole's a tricky contract. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Wiggins. Like, they could just about blow it all up. Like,
well, they've got a lot of tricky decisions to make because Draymond Green has a player option, which 100% he's going to take. So to get rid of him, they probably have to bundle him with a pick to send him somewhere. Klay Thompson, I think, is up for contract. He's going to want a max. Like you said, he's had injury troubles over the years. And it takes away a lot of cap space. And with the new CBA, the collective bargaining agreement with the Players Association, there are big repercussions for going deep into the luxury tax zone now, where you're actually giving up draft picks. And the Warriors have been dramatically over for a long time. Doesn't really matter because they're selling out, they're selling lots of merch, they're putting bums on seats. But when it starts to losing draft picks, it gets kind of a bit dicey.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting team to follow in the offseason. Going to be very funny as well if we come back next week and they've turned this around. Because I feel like
Draymond Green ends up at the Nets next season.
Please, no.
It just feels like Steph is doing it, having to do it all himself, and I can't see him doing all himself, winning three in a row. Like, he does need something out of the others. Maybe Klay brings out one of his epic playoff performances. And one of the games, that'll help. So it's definitely possible because we know what this team can do, but it's
kind of reminds you of like the LeBron James teams of years past where LeBron was having to do it all himself almost. So no disrespect to Klay. Klay's been great. Game six Klay is obviously legendary, but Curry's still paying at that level and the others are slowly dropping off.
I think if Curry was available, the Warriors blew up their roster. Curry's available as the star. It's trademark. Nuggets Suns. We're going to need content in July, so save the Steph Curry trade rumors for July. Nuggets Suns. Games are staying on the home team at the moment. Denver's up 3-2. Game six is in Phoenix, so on track for a game seven in Denver on Sunday. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we go to game seven here, but leaning Denver, Thwaites. I feel like that's a no-brainer for you.
So, okay, I'm definitely leaning Denver, but I will say this. And I said this after like a couple of... Every game, Booker and KD have gone off in. I'm like, there's no way that they can repeat that. It's unrepeatable. And then they'll just go in the next game and like score fucking 80 points between the two. And Booker has just been shooting at just an absolutely insane level in the playoffs. His field goal percentage... is just nuts. I think the Nuggets get it done this week on Thursday rather than it going to a game seven. Game seven would be great, but it's just watching the Nuggets play has just been this weird swing of Jokic has been so consistent, and again, the NBA definitely fucked up by not giving him MVP this year and giving it to Embiid, but it's the others, Murray and stuff like that. They're either like, if they're on their game, Denver's winning. If they're not, it's game over. But yeah, so we'll see. I'm just in my head, I'm already into a Lakers like Denver Western Conference final series, and I think that's going to be fucking interesting. And I think like there is a chance that the Lakers can go through.
Was it the Lakers Nuggets in the bubble? I have a feeling it might be. But anyway, I think it'll go game seven. But I mean, the Nuggets, they've looked very, very hard to beat. I mean, at home. So, and that's rightfully earned over getting that top seed by being, having the best record in the West. My only reservation, if I was a Nugget fan, would be KD and Booker, could they create like a 90-point? No one in history has ever, like a duo, have ever scored 90 points. I think the record's like 88. And I think the other day they got 86. So if they can score a basically pull out a 90-point game, that's basically what it's going to take to beat the Nuggets in Denver. And it'd be like, it'd be horrendously unlucky for a Denver side. I think, and the scary thing for them is KD's actually been pretty ordinary in this series. That's a bit harsh, but for his standards, he's not been anywhere near like the KD we saw in Brooklyn just before he got injured, before he then got traded, where he was kind of at his best. Like, I think he's shooting something like 20%, 25% from three. So this is just the Denver sort of series. So I definitely don't think he's playing at that elite level. Booker's playing, his best basketball that he's ever played.
Well,
It's unbelievable. So
here's a
if
question for
KD can sort
you.
of wake up and be at his absolute best, shooting 60% from the floor, maybe 50 from three, then yeah, watch out in that game. So that's kind of the only, I think the smart money's on Denver, but there is definitely just that lingering over, a potential decider.
Here's a question for you then. Well, it's probably two questions, actually, for you and Sai. It seems to me that Booker and KD are playing far better basketball without CP3 on the floor because it looks far more fluid and faster, which Denver seems to have a problem with because of Jokic's size and him getting, up and down the court. Is this Nuggets team better without CP3? And if CP3 comes back, do you think that helps or harms them at this point?
Simon?
Stunned silence.
Stunned silence. I mean, I think it's probably going to help them, right? I mean, I don't think you can take a guy of that quality out and then say him coming back as a hindrance to them. I don't think he's at that level, but I think the loss of his is not nearly as severe as you might have thought,
No.
based on what we've seen.
I like the theory of without him, they're a bit quicker and faster, and that's, causing the problems. But I agree with Simon that he's too good of a player. They don't have the depth. So I think having him, it wouldn't be a negative. Would it be very interesting? What is his like timeline? Because you are, I mean, end of the day for them, every game's a must win now. So you're going to be, if he is able to come back in the series, it's just slotting him in a game they absolutely have to win, and he's obviously short of minutes.
I reckon they're doing what the Clippers did with Kawhi, where he's 100% not coming back. He probably needs like a long period of rehab or even surgery, and that they're just not going to announce until the series is done. Just keep the other team guessing. Bit of gamesmanship.
Fair.
Nuggets 34-7 at home this season. Haven't lost at home in the playoffs so far. Going to be tough, but Phoenix do have the quality to do it. Let's go east. Start in New York. Miami think they're going to knock out the Knicks and go to the final of the Eastern Conference.
Well, it definitely feels that way. Just kind of been disappointed. Like, it's been such a weird ride for the Miami Heat. They lost the first play-in game against Atlanta. So Atlanta went through as a seventh seed. And then they obviously had that series against Chicago to become the eighth seed. Based on those two games, they look fucking awful. And then they obviously lost Tyler Herro with broken wrist or hand. So their run has been a lot of fun to watch. Jimmy Butler has just been absolutely going off. And it's kind of a bit disappointing for the Knicks and Knicks fans because you thought they were probably going to put up more of a fight, but they're really on the brink, and tonight might be that nail in the coffin for them. So Heat definitely looking like they're going to get it done, which again, just another pretty disappointing season as a Knicks fan.
What a pick, though. Getting on the Heat bandwagon back in August. Let's not talk too much about that one because that one's going to be over tonight. And by the time we get this out, that game's pretty much going to be over. And the big series is the Celtics against the 76ers. Boston up against it, got to win two in a row now to stay alive for the preseason favorite.
Yeah, and they're then looking awful. It's kind of the easiest way to describe it. It's a bit of a turnaround because, Boston is normally a team that plays fantastic basketball together. They're a very good unit. They complement each other's positions very well and, performance very well. In this series, they have looked awful. They have looked completely lost on defense. Some of their role players just haven't been making the open shots from three. Do you know what it fucking reminds me of a little bit? It's the Brooklyn Nets. Watching them where it's like one person or two people performing and the rest of the team just dropping the ball and not helping. And that one person's Tatum. And then sometimes either Marcus Smart or Jaylen Brown will step up, but They haven't been consistent enough, and they look really lost. Some of the coaching like decisions as well, along, you know, where they haven't called timeouts to kind of regroup or put a, you know, a decent play in place. Like, maybe Joe Mazzulla's showing that, hey, like, he needs a few more years to be that consistent and deal with playoff basketball.
Yeah, I feel like he's probably been getting out-coached a little by Doc Rivers. I think that's a good quarter to bring that out. The Celtics haven't looked great the whole playoffs, and you sort of just think, you know, like the Warriors, they've got proven guys, and you're sort of expecting them to come right. And to be honest, I don't rate the 76ers too much because I know Harden's not got a great record in the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, just winning the close ones. I expected Boston to win close one basically in this matchups. Yeah. But as we saw the other day, the 76ers won a huge one, and that's huge for the series and certainly puts them into sort of pole position to get through. So it is interesting. It'll be interesting to see if the Celtics can kind of recapture that form. But yeah, at the moment, they're looking, as you said, like they're definitely looking a bit lost, and I would not be surprised to see Philly, you know, Philly versus the Heat. That's a finals that not many people would have picked.
Some of the rotations as well that Philly are doing, like their second unit that they're putting on the floor, so a lot of the time they're just using Maxey to like lead that second unit. It's been fucking great to watch. And they just absolutely destroy Philly's Boston's second unit. Maxey has just been an absolute joy to watch this season and grow. So I'm really excited to see what the future holds for Maxey.
And obviously, like, I mean, obviously, I'm a big hater of Harden, but there are a lot of people that remember him from his like peak MVP seasons, and Houston are actually probably really enjoying seeing him perform, you know, on the big stage, which he probably hadn't done too much in the past. But you know, he's that game on the weekend was like unbelievable, and he obviously had a huge game on game one when Embiid was out. So you know, that makes him pretty scary, and if he can keep that up, and you know, so I think there are a lot of people, neutrals, that won't mind having someone like him, you know, get a chip. So me, not one of them.
Yeah. Let's move on from James Harden. Let's talk NBA draft. It's coming up next week. I didn't realize it was so soon.
Why is it still really in the middle of the season? Why do they do that in the middle of the season? Is it just because their off season is so much shorter than an NFL one?
It's not coming up. It's not. It's the draft lottery that's coming up.
Yeah, it's correct. Yeah.
The draft itself is not coming up. The draft itself is in June. I was like, this is a prime opportunity to get media coverage in the off season.
Like, yeah, so they do it with a lottery. They like drip feed it.
Correct. Yeah. You got it. And the reason being is because like towards the end of the season, like there are like usual gaps when it starts getting down to the
East and West
finals. So plug in the lottery.
Let me just run through who's got a chance at the first pick. The Pistons, Rockets, and Spurs have 14% chance. Then the Hornets and Trailblazers are the next two. Under 10%, Magic are in chance at 9%. And then you get into the Pacers, Wizards, and the Sixers, Jazz about 4.5% chance. The Mavericks, 3% chance of a first-round pick. That might get Kyrie to stay. Then the Bulls, Thunder, Raptors, and Pelicans are the kind of, you know, last chances, all below 2% chance at the first-round pick. But there's 15 teams in with a chance. I think it's pretty interesting because you're like, even the team with the, like 14% is not good odds.
Not great.
Like, it could really go anywhere here.
And we saw this like happen with the NHL lottery the other day, which is high value draft pick, you know, very clear number one. And then the team that was the favorite, which I think were the Anaheim Ducks. Again, they should just be called the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. It really pisses me off. But they lost out to Chicago. Chicago got the number one pick with a lower percentage. I don't think it was dramatically low. I think it was like 14 versus 12, but still hurts a little bit. But kind of like looking at these teams, and we've had a lot of chat about this in our group chat for like the last couple of months about kind of where we want to see Victor Wembanyama land. And to me, in my head, I split this out into two different ways. One, where would be the most fun? And two, where's the most sensible? The most sensible for me, I would love to see him at the Spurs with Greg Popovich. I think that would be great for his development. I think he would do really well there. And then for let's just do it because it'd be fucking fun. Send him to the Magic or the Hornets with a bunch of those young guys. That's just going to be a fun as hell team to watch. Just tear it up. It's just unfortunate that both those teams are in the East with the Nets. So send him to the West so we don't have to deal with them.
What about the Trailblazers?
Trailblazers, I don't know. I've kind of in my head, well, you've planted the seed in my head that in some way, shape, or form, Damian Lillard is going to end up in Brooklyn. So I think
he won't have Wembanyama goes there.
Yeah, correct.
I get what you mean with Popovich kind of mentoring him and if I'm going to the Spurs. I feel like the Spurs, they've already had this. They got Tim Duncan like 15-ish years ago, and look at what they did on the back. You know, getting him who was clearly a number one at the time, and they had this huge era of dominance. So fuck the Spurs. I hope they don't get it. You know, continue to be an average side. That's my view on them. I agree with you. I would much rather see him go to the Magic or the Hornets, and combine with some other really young promising players, and then to kind of potentially flesh out a dynasty or a team that's certainly contending year after year.
So the team I don't want him to go to is the Rockets, because if he ends up with Harden there, it's going to be kind of have to hate the Rockets. I wouldn't mind seeing him at the Pistons. That'd be
mind Detroit with Cade Cunningham.
Yeah.
Detroit needs some love after a long time.
Is Detroit, would that be back-to-back ones? When was Cunningham one? Was that, or is he a couple of years
they
old?
They didn't have the one last year, I think. They had...
I think it's 2 years out.
There's 2 years. They had that Jalen, or Jared, someone starts with a J, I think.
This is definitely a more interesting lottery. Interesting. Like, normally I wouldn't absolutely care, but because of having this generational freakish player that everyone's raving about, and even the number two pick in Scoot Henderson, who's probably in many other years would be talked about as a number one possible. So, you know, getting where these land, like you kind of know what they're going to pick, but so it actually does make the lottery night a little more exciting than I think a lot of other seasons.
1 in 200 chance he ends up on the Pelicans. It would be pretty funny if one of those teams down the bottom, like the Raptors, the Pelicans, Thunder, that are actually pretty good already.
Yeah.
Cashed in on their, you know, 0.5% chance in the Pelicans case is about 1.5, the Raptors and Thunder. If he ended up there, I mean, it'd kind of be funny because you'd see these teams like the Spurs tanking to try and be in with the best chance to get him. And then he goes to like someone with the longest odds.
Well, it kind of almost gives me vibes of when like the Warriors had all those injuries when like, you know, Curry, Thompson and Green.
Yeah, and they had got a top pick.
Well, they got a top three pick and they fucked it up still. Like, which is kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, that would be depressing.
I don't mind Dallas if that came in, and if Kyrie leaves and it's Doncic and Wembanyama.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
The other thing is, I mean, we're talking about Wembanyama here, but the second pick overall, very valuable as well. Scoot Henderson, a lot of love for this guy. He's probably a number one overall pick any other year.
Yeah.
So it's you know, there's you're talking about two chances at least here of getting a very, very good blue chip player.
Exactly. And I kind of mentally think of this as similar to the year when it was Zion was one and Ja was two. And think about how the injuries and the expectation that Zion had. Obviously, when he's been on the court, he's been incredible. But really, the output he has given over the 3 or 4 years has not been as good as, say, Ja Morant's. And I could see Scoot Henderson, probably a little bit of a chip on his shoulder knowing that he's not gone number one. I could see him be more impactful, say, in his first few seasons. And
a little less pressure, you know, as well.
Yeah. Less pressure, like he can just sort of let rip. And so I think whoever gets the number two is in a great position as well.
Yeah. Like, and I totally agree. It's interesting when you look at like the top like 5 to probably 7 or 8 picks, their stats coming out of college or their last team that they've played for in, you know, respect to some of the players they're playing overseas and stuff like that, are better or comparable to the number one overall pick last year and the year before. So it just shows you how incredibly strong this draft class is. And, you know, like obviously, it would suck to miss out on Wembanyama, who's been, you know, rumored to add over $1 billion to a franchise's value. But, you know, Skoot and some of the others definitely aren't bad backup prizes, that's for sure.
You look further down, I mean, there's tons of talent. One guy I'm interested in keeping an eye on is Rayan Rupert, Frenchman. Played for the New Zealand Breakers. Did the old RJ Hampton thing. Hopefully his career goes a bit better than RJ Hampton's. The chat is maybe he's a mid-first round pick. I know the Nets, Sean Marks, has been down to New Zealand, presumably on a sort of hybrid, see the family, scout this first round pick at the Breakers. So a bit of, you know, seems like a potential chance to drop to the Nets. The Nets are in an interesting position with the 21st overall and 22nd overall picks this year. So he'll be one to watch. But I think there's a lot of good names here.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Nets, especially with those back-to-back first-round picks, 21 and 22.
I think they trade one for a future first-rounder.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was going to be my question. In the NBA, do you see as many sort of trades on the night, as like you do with the NFL? Do people trade up because they want to get the, you know, is that not as big of a thing?
They definitely trade up, but the thing with the NBA and NHL, and, you know, probably to a more extreme example, baseball, is it takes a while longer for these players to develop. So there's not kind of those, oh, I can instantly trade for this player and they're going to make an instant impact because I can put them immediately on my starting team.
Well, they go one-on-one if they're available, you know, like Wembanyama. So I suspect with the Nets, I mean, I think the other thing is you got to put these guys on your roster, and NBA rosters are not huge.
G-leaguers.
G-leaguers. So I suspect the value for the Nets probably in trading back into a future year's draft and giving a team that needs one of those picks. And then, you know, if they do go after a superstar, then they've got one more future first rounder
I think if the Nets can pick up a good point guard and then a good center, they're in a good place.
Yeah. Let's go to the NFL, and we're getting the drip feed of the NFL schedule is coming out. Drip, drip, drip. Few good matches on the international schedule, a few good matches on the marquee days as well. We got Amazon's, clearly, Amazon. So the NFL released some new schedule guidelines, right? And it's pretty clear that Amazon have had a big influence in it after the debacle of getting the Broncos like four times in the first 6 weeks last season, with the news that no team plays two times on Thursday Night Football, I think. And they've also got this big marquee Black Friday game, which is going to be the Dolphins at the Jets, which is a fun game in itself. But a lot of good matchups, some good European games. I look at the game at Tottenham, Jags against, who are the Jags playing at Tottenham Stadium?
Buffalo.
Yeah, Jags, Buffalo. Really exciting game in London. The Jags getting two games in London, though. What stood out in the schedule for you guys so far?
I think one, the Jags getting two games in London, definitely.
They're back to back as well.
Oh, they're back
actually,
to back.
So that's not the same. So
that's actually better. That's better.
Yeah,
but
and presumably so the bye comes before or after.
Well, I mean, start putting on your conspiracy tinfoil hats with me. The owner of
he's British, isn't he?
Well, he owns Fulham, the football club.
It's the most American football.
There was always talks of Jacksonville, of the Jags being a London team. If it was any team that was going to become London based,
correct.
The Jags.
And that's what I think is slowly happening. They're starting to look at building their fan base more and more and more in London. And then
it helps when they've got a good team now as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
People can get on board with.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens there in the next few years, and if the Jags do kind of go over there and, you know, turn into one of four teams in Europe.
Before you go on, maybe that adds to the conspiracy. The year that, you know, it was tanking for Trevor and the Jets were prime pole position, and then they fucked it up by winning a game that they shouldn't have won for their own purposes. So maybe I would have to go back to the tape, but maybe the refs did everything they could to help the Jets there to win that game. Then the Jags get the number one pick in that generational player, Trevor Lawrence. There's the good conspiracy. Check it, the tape.
Check the tape.
We'll have to go back. This is like the conspiracy theory that I heard the other day that the owner of the Suns who restricted the ball was trying to do that and poisoned Jokic with putting substance on the ball, which is one of the most weird things I've heard this week in the US.
We're going to Frankfurt as well this year. We had a successful game in Munich last year.
Yeah.
So they thought they'd go to one of the worst, most boring cities in all of Europe, in Frankfurt, and try that one out. There'll be a lot of money, though. There are a lot of bankers and stuff.
Do you know what's hilarious about Frankfurt? Like, the only reason most people go to Frankfurt is because it's the hub for Lufthansa, and you have to fly there to go get to other countries.
You're either going somewhere else or you're a banker, basically.
Yeah. But yeah, some interesting games. So I think, like, I'm glad the NFL is continuing to focus on Germany. The games last year were such a success over there. You know, the resale cost was insane. Mm-hmm. I saw a figure today that it added $80 million to the local economy by having that game there. So it's an incredible impact. So glad they're doing it there. I think the thing for me is, for a next step, it's still just got to be Sydney in Australia. Like, there's kind of two places that I really want them to expand to and just do one-off games. I want them to start going back to Hawaii and doing games at Aloha Stadium or whatever the stadium was called there. Hawaii is always cool. It's great for destination. It's easy to get to for a whole bunch of people. But then Sydney as well. They had those college football games in Sydney, you know, prior to COVID. So the top college teams went over there and did it. So it's kind of proven that it can handle it. So just seems to me that the addition of a head of the NFL in New Zealand and Australia, her name escapes me at the moment, but it just seems like the writing's on the wall with that one. And it's only going to be a few years until we get there.
I think the biggest hurdle, I think in the pluses, in the positive of doing that. I mean, I would love if they did that, but and I think what would help is I do believe the Australian and New Zealand market, if it was held in Sydney or Melbourne, they would get behind it. I think it would be popular, like we've seen with Germany. There wouldn't be the problem there. Like, there's always, obviously, if you're going to a complete, like, let's say China is on the table as well. I don't know if China would be a guaranteed sellout at top dollar. Like, I don't know if the demand would be there. So, and because I think the time zone for, like, when the NFL games are on, it's awful for China. Not that it's great for Australia and New Zealand, but it's a little bit better. So that might play a part. So, yeah, I don't think while there's the Chinese market, which would be appealing for them to try and break into, I think that's probably less likely. Just there's the problem with Australia. The problem with Australia is, as we know from being based from that side of the world, is how far away it is.
Fuck off. No, okay, I'm going to disagree with that point, just because the way that they've set it up, and we covered this on our socials last year, each NFL team bought the rights to market in certain areas. The team that did it for Australia and New Zealand is the Rams. So flying over from...
Oh, it's got to be a West Coast team. Like a hard West Coast team.
I mean, it's definitely the Rams that are going to do it. So, you know, flying a team over that's already on the West Coast over, you know, it's still a long way to go, but it's, so is London if you're a West Coast team.
Yeah, but it's even further for, it would have to be the Rams, Chargers, Seahawks, 49ers, maybe the Raiders and Cardinals. Maybe. But you wouldn't want to stretch
maybe the
much
Cowboys.
Further.
Maybe the Cowboys
out of Dallas. I mean, you get one of the airlines on board and they can sponsor it. They're all trying to start new routes down there. That would be interesting. I mean, Sydney's got the stadium and it's got the money. And so, you know, I imagine they could pull it off. I think they're going to try and do Paris as well at some point.
They've only ever done it in London. They've done it at Wembley and they've done it, obviously, this new Tottenham Stadium. I could easily see them expand out to, like, Millennium Stadium is a great, especially in the if you're starting to get towards, you know, November, December.
Oh, Manchester as well, you could push up to, like.
Yeah. I think Murrayfield and even Ireland, if they wanted to actually do, you know. So, moving around Europe, it's not that hard. You know, I could do Spain as well. I'm more interested, like, the fact that they did Mexico last year, and we were talking about this on our group chat. So I was confused as to why Mexico was just taken off this year, but. And then Thwaites sort of found an article that sort of referred to the fact that the stadium's getting refurbished, so it's out for a couple of years. But so I thought maybe, like, Would Brazil, would like Rio be a, on the table just as, I think, you know, the South American market?
Argentina, and... yeah.
I think time zone wise it works, but it's just too hard. I mean, like, I remember looking back at the viewership numbers for the NBA versus the NFL, like internationally, South America wasn't super high with the NFL. and I think probably, and keep me honest here, because you guys both know this better than I do, I think NFL season conflicts pretty heavily with football, as in soccer. So I think that would be hard as well to get a stadium allocation then, especially with how much damage an NFL game would do. I think when, again, kind of like looking at it, Dave, like I think your point with Paris, they used to have a league over in Europe like years and years ago. Like for those that played Madden, like me, when you're in your teens back in like early 2000s, you know, the NFL Europa teams, I think there was London, and these were actual teams that played competitively. Netherlands is another one. So wouldn't surprise me to see them go into the Netherlands either, just for a one-off game.
You know what I'd like to see them do as well would be baseball's
Murder got Jerry this, Jones.
baseball's got this Field of Dreams game. You know, NHL's got the Winter Classic. Try and find one of these like made for TV games, and you know, find a storyline, one of the old football movies or something, find a storyline in there that would make more of a spectacle and doesn't have to be played in an 80,000 seat stadium. That would be cool. I don't know if NFL owners with only 17 games in a season are willing to sacrifice the home game and the, you know, 80,000 people they get to them. You know, it's easier in baseball when you've got 162 games to throw one game to, you know, to a made for TV. But I think those games are really cool, and I would like to see them do something like that. But they are going to go more global. Like that's you know, all the sports are doing it. Like baseball's just announced that they're returning to London.
Really?
Mets and Phillies next year. I think the Cubs and Cardinals this year. So they're going to play two game series over there, and I think they're trying to do Paris and maybe somewhere else as well going forward. So teams are going to do that. And I don't hate it, honestly.
No, I mean, interesting choice, London, with the shit weather over there. But yeah,
well, here's the thing. This is how I'm going to get into the next topic. The Yankees and Red Sox played there just before the pandemic, and the games were phenomenal. It was like 13-11 in the first game, and like 12-9 in the second game. Yeah, it was nice. At the Olympic Stadium. Sold out crowd. Wow. They allowed both teams to play in their home uniforms so that they could have like their iconic jerseys and stuff. It was a huge success, and then they closed it for the pandemic. But let's talk about the Yankees. Not going to London this year, but are going nowhere in the American League East. Sitting at the bottom, they've just beaten up on the Oakland Athletics, possibly the worst team I've ever seen in Major League Baseball, sweeping that to get things back on track. But they're a long way back. You guys been watching much? Are you following, keeping up with the Yankees?
You know what's funny? So this is a bit of a weird pivot. And with the launch of AI, there is nothing funnier than asking like ChatGPT and like some of these other like AI bots what they think of current, you know, professional sports teams. So Simon, I'll put it up on our socials what I asked about, like, is this year's Oakland Raiders the worst baseball team of all time? But for me, going back to the Yankees, like, it's getting pretty scary. Like, I've been watching more baseball in general this year just because the pitch clock, like, it's just made it so much easier for me to watch and less boring. It's taken a whole bunch of the bullshit out of it. But I find myself more and more to other teams rather than the Yankees. The Yankees are not bringing me joy at the moment. And watching a team which has a lot of injuries, their superstars aren't playing, like, it's kind of tough watching. You know, it's
you just jump off them. So Jalen Hurts breaks his leg, and you're like, great, I'm going to go support the Giants.
No, well, I'm not supporting other teams. I'm just like, it's like when the Eagles were shit. It's like, oh, like if there's a better game on, I'm going to watch it. And I feel like I've reached that stage with the Yankees where I'm just like, oh, cool.
Who are you watching? Who are you watching then?
Who am I cheating on the Yankees with? Toronto. Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That's like the best friend.
I know. It's, yeah, and you made promises you wouldn't go there, and suddenly you're there. Exactly. You know.
So I'm just looking. We're 38 games in. So what's that? We're nearly a quarter of the way through. I think the Yankees, I mean, they had a very, obviously you touched on the Athletics. That's great for the confidence. You know,
gets the hitters back into scored, you know.
Yeah, get the hitters back into before a pretty tough series at home now, I think, against the Rays over the next 4 days, who are basically the hottest team in baseball at the moment. But I think it's just one of those things. I've learned from, you know, that living here a few years and following it a little bit has just been, it's such a long season that you can't even treat it like you are plates, where it's just like, not that interested to watch them right now. You've got NBA playoffs anyway at pretty favorable times each night. So just kind of switch on when you know Judge is back. I think he came back yesterday after a week or so off. Stanton's still a few weeks away. So not to mention the bullpen, who's been pretty depleted. So once kind of everything comes back, you sort of hope, you know, weather even warms up a bit more. We could be talking mid-June. You know, they could start to go on a bit of a run. So I don't think it's panic stations whatsoever, and not that any of you were suggesting that. I think looking at the records of the rest of the team in the American League, I think the Rays have really jumped out to a huge lead here. Yeah. But if you're talking wildcard spots, just, you know, not great records around the league outside of the Rays. So, yeah, they're not far off from just being in that sort of mix anyway. So,
The thing is, the Rays are doing what the Yankees did last year, and the Yankees had a bigger lead, like 15, 16 games in June, July, and they almost lost that lead. And that was a big collapse. You can't always, you know, rely on that bigger collapse, but, you know, they've had bigger advantages later into the season and almost lost them as well. So, you know, time for them to get back. And they have got a lot of injuries, and it's a brutal division. You've got the Yankees in last place, and they would be two wins above the Twins, who are leading their division with 19 wins at the moment. So it's crazy. I do want to talk about Oakland quickly, because it's kind of comical how bad they are. 8-30. They've given up 289 runs. Only three teams in baseball have scored more than 200, and not close to 289. So they're just like conceding a ton of runs. They've scored 147 runs, which I think is near the bottom of runs scoring. But a lot of chat that this team will break the loss record for a season. I think the record's 120 losses in a season.
Jesus, that's brutal.
That'd be 42 and a half.
That's surprising. So 42 is
still win 42 games.
I would have thought it would have been lower. So I think they're a real chance.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, watching them this last three games against the Yankees, like their pitching is so bad. You could be down 4-0 to them. You're never out of a game. You know, you're like a couple of, you know, hits away. So it was like watching a minor league team. But
It's baseball is one of the, again, from watching it, it's all about just getting it right, being fit and peaking at the right time, being September, October. You ain't winning anything in May. So, yeah, I think it's all good. And
this is the thing, you get your guns back and you get, you know, and you'd like to have them back sooner rather than later. But guys like Rodon, Severino, Stanton and stuff, you'd rather they're injured now than certainly in September. Of course, you'd rather they're fit the whole time. But as you say, the key is getting them fit and firing, going into the playoffs. And then they've got the talent there when they're all fit to certainly compete with the best. But right now, they don't really look like that.
Yeah.
Are we going to a Yankees game soon?
I hope so. I was going to message you guys last week about it. But
playing spike ball this weekend, so...
Spike ball, exactly.
When I'm away in London,
we've got the one. The thing is, we're all keen. We haven't heard from the one guy that's got the spike ball set. So he listens to this podcast, though. So,
yeah. Do you know what though? I was thinking about, and when we were talking about our going to a park, how fast do you think it would take for one of us to be arrested over here in America if we started playing bull rush at a public park? I reckon it'd be pretty fucking fast.
It'd be pretty good. Definitely restarted, including everyone else in the game. Unwilling participants.
I've never seen a. I don't think I've ever seen a policeman in New York ever do anything.
Yeah,
so I don't think you're getting arrested.
That's a good point. That's a good point, and a good throwback to when we all went to Boston,
and we saw police do something.
Well, yeah, we had police and horses come up and tell us off for playing cricket in a park.
You could do anything except in New York, and in Boston they'll tell you off for playing cricket. Not even playing cricket, we're just doing slip catches.
Slip catches
very sparsely populated park. I'll add, like there was
maybe
not, it wasn't
maybe
like
it was because we were playing slip catches without any visible guns, like, attached to us. That was the problem.
I was going to go down the path of, like, you know, because they, you know, obviously fought against the British and you know, the battle for independence. I thought you were going to go down that path, Dave, if not the depressing one.
They definitely didn't know what was going on. Must have thought we were causing hassles to the rest of the public. I just think they were completely bamboozled by what we were doing.
They were bamboozled. They were wrong-footed. On horseback. Man, that was weird. thanks so much for listening. Thanks for making it this far. If you made it this far, clearly you would be interested in following us on Instagram as well. So do that. and we'll talk next week. Have a good one.
Bye.